Where people want to be, that's the place where business want to be. And where business want to be, that's the place where investors want to be.
A building should both be static enough to survive a lifetime, but it should also be flexible enough to be able to accommodate change.
How do we create places that are attractive destinations from the start, but also remain relevant and attractive for generations to come? The answer lies in designing not just for the people, but with the people. In this episode, we explore how social infrastructure and inclusivity are key in unlocking the long-term value for everyone involved. Joining us is Marius Harland Næss, who is the Nordic Director of Acquisition and Business Development at Snøhetta. He brings the designer perspective for how spaces can help build society, showing how architecture can give back to the community and bring people together. Welcome, Marius.
Thank you so much.
We are also joined by Ida Granqvist, Managing Director of Skanska Commercial Development Nordic, responsible for Gothenburg. She offers the developer's expertise on creating and measuring long-term value, demonstrating how people-centric design and social impact directly drives economic success and tenant retention. Welcome, Ida.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Marius, I'm going to start with you. Snøhetta, you have the connections between people and spaces. It's really in the heart of the story of Snøhetta. Can you share with us a little bit what it means for your company and maybe what it means for you?
As a part of Snøhetta, you're a part of this idea that, you know, all our surroundings are shaped for people or with people. And I think that is sort of one of the foundational values that we bring in. So for Snøhetta, we usually say, you know, we design with the people, not for the people. And we usually say that we work with architecture as a tool to create society.
Ida, from your perspective as a developer, is that human connection just as important or central to when you build?
Yes, definitely. I'm not an architect, but I'm an engineer and asset manager. And for me, it's the human relationship is the heart of architecture and design. If we look at the social space in between buildings in our communities, they are often designed by people like me and Marius early on, and it looks super good on sketches. But it's really important that we also think about how does it look in reality. And we really need to think a few more rounds about making the design and architecture into a place that actually fit in the everyday life. Because when we do, then people will come there, they will stay. And when they stay, then business will come and then value will be created and retained.
Great for the people and great for the business. But Marius, coming back to architecture, why should we want you to think about more than to create beautiful structures, well-functioning structures? What's the value that you bring when you also include the social infrastructure around a building or a structure?
We usually also say that the more you can, as a human being, relate to a building over time, the better society you will get. So it's the building's ability to make people interact with it that actually have a big impact. But then it's even more important as a developer or as an architect to raise the question, you know, what can we give back to the surroundings? But it requires a lot from a lot of actors, and that is complicated in today's society.
Yeah, and coming into that, a lot of actors, it normally becomes more complicated. What's the main barriers that you meet when you want to get this full-on experience with a building?
Building places and building society is complex because it involves a lot of people. So what it requires is, in many cases, a common goal or at least a way to sort of understand the different people's goals and then be able to find sort of the bare minimum of what we can agree on, which I think is very interesting. And also together with Skanska, we have been working with this early involvement, early on involvement in many of our projects. But we see that early involvement is key to get a good result.
Yeah. And Ida, I mean, you represent commercial development. What's your thoughts here?
I actually fully agree with Marius. It's an early involvement that is key for creating successful areas. But urban development is also filled with different stakeholders, with different perspectives and drivers, which makes it a bit hard sometimes to get that early involvement. We need to be really conscious on having a clear process for that.
Mm. And we talked about early on that it's about the long-term value for a building, and you want a vibrant area where people want to be and come. What's the time frame when you talk about when we talk about long-term value for the society and the investors? And
as architects, we always thrive to, in a way, think that everything we do should last for many generations. And then there are always this sort of case where Ida experiences, which is, how can a building accommodate a use right now or the next 10 years? So a building should both be sort of static enough to survive a lifetime, but it should also be flexible enough to be able to accommodate change, and that sort of duality is difficult. So how do we find the right balance between eternity and the constant need of change and agility?
Interesting. Ida, do you have a comment on that?
Yeah, I have a comment, because it's all those actors and it's also legislation like zoning plans that doesn't allow us to be as flexible as we may wish to be, or that actually eternity would require from us. And I think that adaptability is key to have something that is performing from time to time over elections, but also over pandemics, geopolitical environments like we have today, and going forward when actually demand is changing constantly. And that is tricky, to build for a future flexibility that we don't know today.
Mm. So there are some barriers with the zonings and things like that. Is that up on the agenda and up in discussions, do you say today, Ida?
It is on the agenda, it's up on discussions, but it's extremely hard to change. But that is something that we at Skanska work very hard together with you, Marius, of course, and the rest of the industry to allow flexibility going forward.
Taking us a little bit back to social infrastructure, is it common for a client to welcome this early involvement, to get the right spaces in and around the building, would you say?
I think yes. By the last 10 years, we have seen an immense increase in at least in the Nordic region, which me and Ida is probably covering the best, but I think this happens also worldwide. So a focus and a curiosity in sustainability being sort of a driver for a building project. So what I think is the problem right now is that the systems are lacking behind, So if you need to harvest, for example, sun on your building, it will have an impact on the planning regulations. Will the local municipality allow for that? These things are still definitely not optimal.
If the system is lagging behind, I guess it puts a lot of pressure on the developers to really drive that change. Ida, would you say that the industry have that broad perspective today?
I would say that there may not be that many actors that have that broad perspective and broad view. But for me, not taking the big picture into consideration, that's high risk. And taking social aspects, for example, into consideration, that's risk management today. We have an example both in the Nordics, in Havneholmen, in Copenhagen, but also in Prague, where we actually try to turn things around, have an early involvement and take suburban space that are industrial and tried to change the structure of the surrounding areas and then put buildings and plots into the equation. So starting with environment as a spine or a core and then develop the area. And that has been really successful. So I hope that in a few years we will say that this is what most developers and also cities would like to see.
Mm. And just recently, you were managing the Skanska portfolio of investments, property investments, Ida. Did you have these topics on top of your mind, and what did you focus on in order to kind of secure a good investment in your portfolio?
Yeah, I would say both. We had it in mind, and sometimes it came to us as a consequence. But one thing that we are much more conscious on about today is getting feedback from the tenants and from the society that passes by, walk through the buildings and the areas that we have, and make sure that in an area, for example, the Stockholm New Area, which also is a transformation area in Stockholm with residential office, bus depot, and so on, that we make sure that we collaborate between buildings to make sure that we have the right type of amenities that actually complement each other. But also for us to actively seek feedback, to engage in customer satisfaction studies, but also to meet the users of our environments.
Because can you measure the success when you succeed there when it comes to the occupancy rate and tenant retention and so forth?
It's actually quite difficult to measure. We try to do it, but the key for us where we see that we succeed is when tenants don't move. When we manage to meet the demand, we it could be adding a gym, it could be a smaller thing as well. Or when tenants move within an area, they don't go to some new place, they stay. We have residential development as well, and there we actually created a social value index or social value creation index called SOVI, where we try to take aspects into consideration really, really early. And I think it's 84 aspects when it comes to the apartment, the building, the neighborhood, and the community. And to think about those aspects early on, I think that is key. And we try to do it in a structured way.
Mm. And I mean, you're both participating in this report, Shaping Sustainable Places, coming out soon. And in there, they touched the importance of having these social aspects in an early involvement in a project. What would you say about how we are performing there, Marius?
First of all, I just wanted to also add on to what Ida said about, you know, the post-occupancy studies. Like in Snøhetta also, we're super eager to understand better, you know, what kind of change will this building sort of mean to the society around? And that is sort of something that there's too little research on that part. And it's also too little understanding. I think we could benefit a lot from understanding better, you know, what does the tenants like with this building? Why do they come back to certain areas in a city? Why, you know, all these sort of details are so crucial also in learning, in doing it better next time. Skanska and Snøhetta have lately built a building in Oslo, one of the world's first naturally ventilated office buildings. And we see that, you know, are the office market open to, you know, less technology and actually going back to, you know, having shafts in the wall that opens and closes? And is it possible to have a good working environment within these kind of circumstances? And we have seen until now by having that insight, and that means like really down to, you know, reality, it means that there's a QR code on every desk in the office environment where each and every user of the office space are, I don't know if they're obliged even, but they're asked to report from time to time, how do you perceive the working environment today? And there has been a lot of uncertainty in which, you know, with a mechanical ventilation system, you can always, you know, optimize the heat and the cold, you know, you can always regulate much better. And we know that people want to feel confident when they work. At the same time, we come from a place where if you're cold and if the weather outside are cold, then you put on some wool socks, you know. You can close the window if you feel cold, or you can open the window if it's too hot. So there's something that we don't relate to, you know. We have decided on our societies that we should not anymore relate to our surroundings. It should just be fixed by someone else. But what we see is that when people can control themselves, their own environment, they're actually getting happier. And I think that is an important way to also push innovation, to say, you know, we don't know that yet, but we have to test it, and we also need to see the result of it. So I just wanted to sort of add on to that, because I believe that level of post-occupancy research can also allow for more research.
I agree, if I can add on. And I think also sometimes we try to find out what the tenants want or what the end user would like to have. And actually something very impactful is also to have a dialogue also here and to explain that if we do it like this, it will save carbon dioxide, it will save energy, it will be better for the environment, but you will feel a bit less comfortable. We usually get very positive feedback when we do changes and then we communicate why we do it.
So more facts and feedback into future decision making. So a good follow-up on that one, Ida. Do you guys have any good examples where investments in the public arena and social value have strengthened the asset value? Or when you, is it the gut telling you?
I would say both. It's definitely a gut feeling. But as I said, that where people want to be, that's the place where business want to be. And where business want to be, then that's the place where investors want to be. And looking back at that project in Port 7 in Prague, that's a really good example where we just started by looking at the infrastructure in between. What do we have in the community at this plot? And when we created that spine of activities and reason to for people to go there and to stay there, then value came also when we put separate buildings on the site.
That's a great example. Do you have any concrete example?
Yeah, yes, I think I have concrete examples, definitely. But also in general, I think what we can relate to all of us is also, you know, in areas in a city where the quality of the city is high. You know, there's a close proximity to a mobility hub. There's cafes and restaurants and activity and people are living around. That has also higher willingness to pay. We also know by certain then examples that, you know, with the Times Square development, which is a landscape architecture project that was involved in for many years in New York, even though it started with a wild idea, and that was, you know, is it possible to remove some of the traffic over the Times Square to actually open up for public life, you know? And that was almost like impossible for someone to understand. And one of the sort of actors that was also negative was a lot of the commercial shops and, you know, the different stakeholders on the first floor that actually felt that, you know, if you can't drive and park outside the shop, that will have an immense impact on our revenue, you know. What we saw in the end of the day was that open up for just being, you know, in a dense city where people want the place to just be and hang out and grab a coffee. It has over time increased, you know, the prices of rent in a positive way. So I think there are always examples like that, you know, taking care of your surroundings have an impact on the commercial activity around. What happens outside your building will always impact what is going on within the building.
I fully agree. And another layer of that is actually that when societies change, I know Niklas Hermansson, a Swedish researcher, he points out actually one important part, and that is loneliness. That's a very important factor. When we look on how we use digital tools, there is an increased amount of time. And that puts a lot of importance and weight on how we actually make sure that we have the right type of areas when we do meet and when we have the human interaction. He also points out that the office will become something else, more of an experience than it is today. Not only a desk where you sit 8 hours straight and then go home. It's a place where you go to meet, get energized, and maybe potentially leave with a better feeling than when you arrived. It's the reason why you want to go there that is really important for us to capture when we develop and create spaces.
I just wanted to add on, it was a Gothenburg example, which I think is quite interesting. I don't know if it's a tendency, but in outside Gothenburg, where Ida is situated right now, we have been, together with an ambitious client in Sweden, been developing a neighborhood in an old quarry. What we saw there was that to attract potential, you know, people to buy houses and to buy and also to work there, we had to start a little bit from another angle. We had to make the attractiveness before sort of the development kept on. So from the development, from a really early standpoint, we decided to sort of heal a wound in that landscape. So deciding that this whole development should be like healing then the wound in the landscape, which the quarry had made, and doing that by actively choosing natural material in the way we developed it. But not only that, we also decided to start with the community. So the first step the developer took was actually to make the community house, which opened last year. And that means that the whole development, to have the courage in a way, to say that we have to make place, we have to place make before we see hopefully that the city will be developed over 10 to 15 years. That is a very good example of how it's commercially viable and it's commercially possible to actually think differently. So to onboard early has hopefully an impact later on. And in that specific case, we needed to do so, but we see also in city development much more than that the way the first floor is done has an impact on what are the willingness to pay in the upcoming floors afterwards. So this placemaking task is getting more and more important.
Would you say placemaking is top of agenda for you, Ida?
Definitely. And I can connect to that creation of warm and welcoming ground floors, because when we have that, then we create a base of activity and accessibility, which is key for good development and places where people want to stay. Mm. And I actually think that the report that Skanska will issue with the same name as this podcast, Shaping Sustainable Places, I think that actually touches upon a lot of things that we have discussed today. And it's not easy to have an early involvement and think of everything when we design. But we actually tried to capture four things that are essential for us going forward and that we think we should focus on more in the future to become more resilient. And it's design for change. It's that adaptability that we touched upon today. And it's working together across disciplines and also across the entire value chain. It is designing for and with people and also to measure in a holistic way, which also includes those social aspects.
That summarizes the discussions we had quite well, didn't it? Thank you, Ida. Then I would like to send a big thank you to both of you for taking part in this really important and interesting conversation about how to shape sustainable places and spaces. Thank you so much, Marius, and thank you so much, Ida.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Really fun to be a part of.
As Marius and Ida have shown, by embracing people-centric design, promoting collaboration, and building in flexibility, we create places that are not only resilient for the community, but also deliver sustainable economic values for the investors. Thank you for listening to Shaping Sustainable Places. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform and feel free to contact us either on Skanska Group account on LinkedIn or email us to podcast@skanska.com. That's it for this time. I am Malin Dahlén and this is Shaping Sustainable Places.